From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, state lawmakers pass a $156 billion budget. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the spending plan, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announces a key review of General Electric's cleanup of the Hudson River. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. State lawmakers passed a $156 billion state budget this week, just past the Friday, April 1st deadline. Lawmakers passed bills through the night Thursday and into the morning on Friday before all of the budget bills were finalized. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has the highlights of the plan.
As voting began Thursday night, Governor Cuomo gave a briefing about some of the details of the budget agreement. He says a minimum wage increase will bring New York City to a $15 rate in 3 years, 4 years for small businesses with less than 10 employees. Long Island will reach $15 in 6 years, but upstate would only reach a rate of $12.50 in 5 years. Cuomo says the compromise takes into account the variations in the economies of different regions of the state and business worries about the rate going up too high, too fast.
If you increase it too quickly, people have a fear that it could have a negative impact. So what is the right calibration?
The plan also calls for a pause to reevaluate the effects of the minimum wage increase before continuing to hike the rate.
Beginning in 2019, the state can suspend the scheduled increases if the economic conditions warrant, okay? This is a safety valve.
The agreement also includes a plan first put forward by Senate Republicans to lower income tax rates for joint filers and small businesses earning up to $300,000 a year. Tuition at the State University of New York will be frozen, and charter schools will get more money. And the state will have a paid family leave program funded by employees that, after a 4-year phase-in, will provide workers with 2/3 of their pay for up to 12 weeks.
You shouldn't have to be in a position where you have to choose between a paycheck and being there for your family.
As Cuomo was announcing the deal, legislative leaders were still briefing their members on some of the remaining details. Earlier in the evening, lawmakers were asked to vote on some bills that included monetary appropriations, but not language on specific programs, which led to complaints from Democrats who were in the minority in the Senate, including Senator Mike Gianaris from Queens.
So I'm wondering, on behalf of not only my conference, but on behalf of the public, who is dying to know what's going to be in this budget if we ever get to see it, where does the confidence that those provisions will be in a budget that's yet to be printed come from?
When Senator Gianaris persisted in asking when senators would see the bills they were expected to vote on, acting Senate President Joseph Grifo of Utica shut him down.
Senator Gianaris,
bend the gavel on your ass,
Senator Gianaris, you're out of order.
This is not a...
Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco, a Republican from Syracuse, intervened.
Let's calm down a little bit, both sides, and I would like to see Senator Gianaris' further questions, and hopefully we could move to the point and get on with this at a reasonable hour.
Debate then continued in a more civil manner. It was expected to go long into the night. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Higher minimum wage. The budget is $156 billion.
Well, first of all, that's a lot of money. I hope those words trip off our tongues, $156 billion. That's a lot of money. And many countries around the world, many countries around the world, don't have a budget approaching that. Secondly, once again, Andrew Cuomo campaigns. He throws his lot in for $15, and it turns out the $15 minimum wage isn't going to be there for a long time, even in New York City, where it'll come first. I believe it's 2018, a couple of years. And as Mario Cuomo used to say to us, David, you and I remember it very well, something like Shanashnu Nubab, which means between now and then a new pope would be born. And anything could change. So, again, it is pure Cuomo. He makes a pledge. He says he's going to do it. Now, apparently, the state Senate really said, no, we're not going to do this $15 all in one piece. So do we know what Cuomo really wanted? I mean, do we really know if he wants a Democratic state Senate, for example? And all indications are that he's not working very hard to make sure that that happens. This is typical. He will claim a victory. He'll say he got it. But did he? And the Republicans, playing to upstate New York and knowing $15 an hour is a lot of money for some small businesses, have won what I would consider to be a pretty significant victory in keeping the $15 thing out for a long, long time. By that time, goodness knows what'll happen.
One of the things you've often talked about in this budget process is that many of the bills that get passed, the lawmakers don't even read.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. Listen, I've been around here since I was a kid, and I'm not anymore. But I've watched it in the middle of the night. They promise they're not going to do the middle of the night anymore, but they always do the middle of the night. You get them tired. They want to go home. They want to go to bed. Pretty soon, you hear what you would hear on a sheep farm. Bah. They are being led around by the noses, and they are easily manipulable at a time like this.
From the budget to the April 19th presidential primary in New York, Alan, and former Senator of New York, Hillary Clinton, has started a big push, and of course, will be facing Bernie Sanders from neighboring state Vermont.
Well, David, she just got a big hand from none other than Donald Trump, who announced that we ought to criminalize abortion and that women who have abortions ought to be punished. Well, Bernie Sanders said quite correctly, that's awful. But Hillary, a woman, comes out and really blasts Trump. And the news is full of sound bites from Hillary. So maybe, you know, I mean, he really wanted to win primaries, Trump. So he gives some, throws some new red meat on the fire, but doesn't really realize the implications of what he's saying, that there are a lot of women out there who have had abortions, who are going to have abortions, and who want the option. And when Trump says, we're going to put you in prison if you have an abortion, that really is, even for Trump, over the top. And the fact that he pulled back and then modified his position so that only the doctors went to prison, quote, only the doctors went to prison, that is really going to be troublesome for him. I think we're going to see it in the Wisconsin primary.
Does Hillary beat Bernie in New York?
You know, it's a tough one. There is always a center-left position in the party, and I think Bernie has a lot of those people. On the other hand, Hillary was a senator for 8 years. She knows an awful lot of people. You know, I've interviewed her several times, and she can be charming and really know how to handle the press and others. I think it's going to be closer than people think. I think Bernie really wanted to turn it around and win New York. Based on the polls I'm seeing, although there were polls in earlier primaries which turned out to be dead wrong, based on the primaries that I'm seeing, I think Hillary's going to have it.
We spoke recently about some of the water problems, from the chemical PFOA to lead in water in Binghamton schools, and many of these problems that affect communities not only in New York but around the country have to do with poor infrastructure. We also saw this week another report, Alan, on the melting of the ice sheet that could flood coastal cities by 2100. And, of course, that means New York City.
It does. It means all the barrier islands. I, David, grew up on Fire Island in the summers. It's really had challenges lately. I know that when I was a kid, my house was something like fourth from the ocean, and then it moved up to third from the ocean because houses go into the ocean. And this is predicted. Al Gore showed us in An Inconvenient Truth what was going to happen. And sure enough, along comes Katrina, and it does happen. It's going to happen again. This is something that every New Yorker ought to be concerned about, that everybody ought to be concerned about. We're talking about our children, our grandchildren, and their children. And, you know, the President of the United States comes along and says we ought to take some remedial action, and he lays it all out, and the Republicans give him a hard time about that. So he goes ahead and does it on his own. Then they say, you're not allowed to do it on your own. When history is written on what happened, we're talking now 2020, there are going to be a lot of people who say, hey, you guys had the chance to turn this around, or at least to try to, and you didn't.
President Obama, you mentioned, just mentioned him. He launched a critique of the media this week at a Syracuse University Journalism Prize dinner, basically saying that they need to do a better job when it comes to covering political campaigns.
Well, that's very hard. You know, David, these people who run the networks and run the MSNBCs and the NBCs and the CBSs and the ABCs, it's all about money. It's all about selling advertising. It's all about having time. So, yes, this is not the time of Edward R. Murrow anymore or Huntley and Brinkley. However, when you give, you start talking about Donald Trump and what he's saying, and you know that every time you have Trump on your air, your numbers go up and you die to get him there and you let him do things that nobody else has ever been allowed to do. That's because it's the economics of the system. If you have more people listening, your advertising can be sold for more. That's what happens. Of course, the president is absolutely right. We've fallen into terrible times where, when it comes to journalism, there are fewer reporters, there are fewer people out there. Newsrooms used to have, you used to walk into one of these newsrooms and you'd see people at 50, 60 desks. Now you see three people huddled down at the end of the room in some cases. So it's the economics of journalism that really do determine a great deal of its failure.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The 124-mile Constitution Pipeline would carry natural gas from Pennsylvania's shale fields through New York's southern tier and into Schoharie County, connecting with a network of other pipelines. By now, had things gone according to plan, natural gas would be flowing through it. But as the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports, public opposition and regulatory red tape have dogged the $680 million project.
Constitution Pipeline Company spokesman Chris Stockton says since day one, the company has worked very closely with the State Department of Environmental Conservation to set the project in motion.
We received our FERC certificate back in December of 2014. You know, they looked at this project and ultimately determined that this project was important, it was needed, and it could be done in an environmentally sensitive area.
Construction was to have begun in late spring of 2015, and was expected to be completed by the summer of 2016. But by November of 2015, DEC had not acted on essential water quality permits and gave no timeline as to when a decision would be made. Environmental groups have been against granting the permits. They fear the pipeline would threaten public health and open the door to toxic emissions and water pollution, not to mention the possibility of explosions. They argue the project would impact 277 waterways, 1,000 acres of forest and farmland, and 700,000 trees. Federal regulators in January rejected Constitution's request to cut trees in New York along the proposed pipeline route. Stockton says the environmental window for that to happen has closed for the season.
It will open up, back up again next fall. So pending the receipt of the necessary permits, we could begin the tree felling work in the fall.
Last summer, Colleen McKinney trekked to the state capitol to participate in one of many pipeline protests. She explained that her Delaware County home is next to land seized through eminent domain for the Constitution Pipeline.
Not for the public good, not for the benefit of America, but to increase the profits of rich private gas corporations and their shareholders.
Stockton, pointing out that New York gets 97% of its natural gas from other states, says the benefit is obvious.
Currently, New York doesn't have access, direct access to Pennsylvania gas, which is the cheapest in the country. So this project is going to facilitate for the first time direct access to the largest and one of the most economically priced natural gas supply areas in the country.
McKinney and other pipeline opponents contend no one in Pennsylvania, New York, or New England will benefit from the fracked natural gas it would carry, since it will be going to Canada via the Iroquois pipeline.
This gas is not for us. These companies want to export it because natural gas prices in the rest of the world are much higher than they are here. Profit is their only concern.
Stockton disagrees.
This infrastructure is very important. It's very important for the region and also for New York, especially the southern tier, which doesn't have gas access now. And this pipeline is going to facilitate local gas service to homes and businesses in the southern tier, which right now are desperate for it. They want it very badly because they need some type of economic stimulus in that area.
He says construction of the Constitution Pipeline will likely directly and indirectly support more than 2,400 jobs and generate $130 million in labor income for the region along its pathway. The DEC answered a request for comment by email, stating in part, quote, "The project must still obtain necessary permits from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and DEC before project construction can begin. DEC is undertaking a careful and thorough review of the necessary state permit applications as required by our protective regulatory programs. As with all complex proposals that impact a large portion of the state, DEC works with state and federal agencies and other stakeholders to fully understand the potential impacts and make our decisions based on sound science. DEC considers all public comments received as part of our review process. A conclusion is expected in April." For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
U.S. Senator Charles Schumer is calling on the Federal Highway Administration to fast-track approval of a shared-use plan for the new Tappan Zee Bridge. He especially supports local officials on the Rockland side in their preference for a particular plan. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
New York senior senator stood steps away from the Hudson River on the Rockland County side in South Nyack Tuesday at Gessner Avenue Waterfront Park, with the new Tappan Zee Bridge going up behind him. He says a certain pedestrian access plan in the village has strong local support, and he is calling for federal help in moving the plan along.
So I am here to urge the Federal Highway Administration, FHWA, to grant a federal waiver that would allow this project to move forward without going through the same rigmarole all over again. Delays, additional length of review of this proposal, which is less intrusive environmentally and widely supported by the community, could be detrimental to advance the efforts of this project.
He aims to avoid lengthy reviews and potential delays that could increase costs and stall construction. Schumer says the FHWA, the lead federal agency on this project, must issue a finding of no significant impacts on the Tappan Zee shared-use path parking facilities and bicycle pedestrian connections project. Schumer explains that issuing this finding would waive parts of the National Environmental Policy Act process that would require the project to undergo an entirely new environmental review of this recently amended project alternative. The Democrat has sent his request to the FHWA administrator. A spokesman for the Federal Highway Administration says the agency has received Schumer's letter and is considering it. Again, Schumer.
We want to stop the mistakes of the past, because everyone knows, well, those people who know the history know, that in 1955, when the bridge was first built, there was no community input. In fact, the bridge ripped apart the community of South Nyack, and people had no say.
Here's South Nyack Mayor Bonnie Christian.
I'm a fourth generation South Nyacker, so I was alive and a child when they were building the first bridge, so we didn't want that to happen again, the disruption to our small little village.
Schumer, Christian, and local elected officials and residents are behind a plan known as Alternative F that would provide off-street parking accommodations, connections to parking areas from the shared-use path, access from existing bicycle and pedestrian routes to the shared-use path, and limited ancillary facilities.
So they came up with something that is now called Alternative F. F for fantastic.
Fantastic, the best.
There you go. Is that what it really was, F for?
Yes.
Excellent, I guessed right.
Alternative F involves rerouting access to the thruway. Again, Mayor Christian.
We're the only village, in fact, that had a village street that goes on to the New York Thruway to get on. So now we're going to just reroute it. I think people were concerned a little bit that we were closing the whole entrance. We're not. We're just rerouting it onto US 9W and keeping it off our local streets.
Also on the table is Alternative E, which includes off-street parking and restrooms in an area adjacent to the northern portion of Interchange 10 and does not reroute traffic to the thruway. Alternative F involves land within the eastern section of Interchange 10. Christian points out that recent public hearings on the plans drew overwhelming support for F.
And this is the one that keeps all the parking and traffic off of our local streets and puts everything on Interchange 10 where it should be.
On the Westchester side in Tarrytown, alternative Z and F are the same, where the shared use plan involves all New York State Thruway Authority property. Comments on the environmental assessment for the proposed shared use path, parking facilities, and bicycle pedestrian connections in the villages of South Nyack and Tarrytown are due by April 1st to either the New York State Thruway Authority, State Department of Transportation, or the Federal Highway Administration.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has announced a key review of General Electric's cleanup of the Hudson River. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports public and private organizations are asking for transparency and inclusion.
The EPA will undertake a second five-year review of GE's cleanup of PCBs from the Hudson River. Dredging on a 40-mile stretch between Fort Edward and Troy, New York, was finished this fall. Now, General Electric will remain on the river for monitoring and habitat restoration work. As the massive Superfund project turns a corner, EPA spokeswoman Larissa Romanowski says these five-year reviews will continue into the future.
Really, the purpose of this review, which is required under the Superfund law every 5 years, is just to ensure that the cleanup is working as intended and that it will be protective of human health and the environment.
General Electric spokesman Mark Behan says the company is looking forward to the review.
We're very proud of what we've accomplished so far on the Hudson. We share the goal of a cleaner Hudson, and we'll continue to do our part in cooperation with local communities and the federal and state agencies.
And those agencies will be paying close attention. Catherine John is case manager for the U.S. Department of Interior for the Hudson River Natural Resource Damage Assessment and Restoration.
We appreciate EPA's commitment to ensuring all parties remain informed throughout the second five-year review process.
The Department of Interior, along with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is conducting a natural resource damage assessment to determine the full effect of the PCB contamination on the environment. John said the trustees are looking forward to providing input on analysis of data, coordinating preparation of the second five-year report, and reviewing and commenting on the remedial action plan. Nonprofit environmental organizations like Scenic Hudson also want to weigh in. Scenic Hudson President Ned Sullivan says the group is working to secure expertise and share its opinion with EPA. Sullivan has been critical of GE's characterization of the project as a success and has joined others in blasting the closure of a dewatering facility used in the dredging work in Fort Edward. He also criticized EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck's January letter in the Albany Times-Union, in which she praised the work done by GE so far. In her letter, Enck acknowledged the group's pushing for further dredging on the Hudson, including in the Champlain Navigational Canal, but said, quote, the conditions under which EPA could require more dredging have not been met, unquote. She said EPA will continue to coordinate with the trustees as the state and federal agencies continue their assessment of the river. Sullivan says no organization should claim the cleanup is successful until the next five-year review is completed.
The cleanup has not been certified as complete and successful, and the five-year review is intended to answer the question with all parties at the table whether, in fact, the cleanup is a success.
EPA says members of the public can submit comments during the review process online. A series of workshops will be held with the Hudson River Community Advisory Group, where the cleanup will be discussed in further detail.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1614. Or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.